John Lopez is in here legitimately invested in the Baltimore Orioles. He dropped an expletive because there was an out when they are as they continue to threaten
first
the Mariners.
And third and a pop out. Hell out of
here. He is legitimately
you are here.
Upset. We are this is sickness.
It's happening.
We got to get back. We got to all right. We got to have a little bit of a cleanse cuz yeah. that was a level of sickness that even startled me. So let's do this. On the day of one of two of the most important days of training camp, the joint practices today, it was with the Carolina Panthers. Let's hear from D'Amico Ryans, a man who, mind you, kind of stayed with the offense today. What did D'Amico Ryans feel about this joint practice here right now?
Good afternoon. For today, I was really pleased with the way we practiced, the way the Panthers practiced. Thought we got productive work in, is what we set out to do on both sides. Everybody's cooperative, working together, and we were able to get out of it what we expected, right? A chance to go against different schemes, different players. And it was really good work for us, offensively and defensively. Even special teams were able to get some work as well. So all three phases, we got better today. We improved, and that's what you set out to do, joint practice, to improve and get better, and that's what we did today. So thankful to Dave and his team for coming down, working out here in Houston today.
Coach, how important it is for you guys to have a good clean practice? Nobody was on the ground too much. Yep. Everybody was able to walk away, still be able to come out with some lessons.
I expect every practice to be that way. Clean, work as professionals. That's what we are. This is our job as professional football players. We got to work in a manner accordingly, staying off the ground, staying up, protecting each other. All right, we know the effort it takes to stay up is pretty hard, and it takes real athletes to do that. And, you know, these guys did a tremendous job of that today, and now we get a chance on Saturday to go cut it loose and play real football. But I thought our guys worked really well today together. For the receivers, all three of those guys you mentioned, Berrios, Watson, Metchie, all just competitive at the catch point. Each guy showing up and made plays. Pick a day. One of those guys is showing up, making plays, and it's really a lot of great competition there amongst all those guys.
You know, same things, it seems like Hutchinson taking advantage of opportunities. What have you seen, you know, first time you all drafted
him? Yeah, Hutchinson, first year till now, he's just gotten better every year. He's shown what it looks like when you put the work in and you really want to get better at your craft, you can do that. That's what Hutch, that's what he represents. That's what he's done. And I mean, credit to him for putting the work in, not only here, but putting the work in while he's away, while no one's around. He's working all the time, and it's a credit to him, and it shows up, and now he's in a really good spot to help our team.
Domingo, could you explain the value and the difference that you talk about, the difference of going up against a different scheme, different coaches? What's the value of that
team? Yeah, for us, schematically, when you're in training camp, especially for us at week three, right, we've going against offense, defense guys, they know the snap count. They know the plays they're going to see. They know the formations, and it kind of get monotonous after that third week. So to break it up, right, it helps us because Carolina, they do a lot more under defense, which our defense doesn't run much. So our offensive line get a chance to make calls and checks versus different schemes up front. They get to see different pressures, right? How are we going to pick this pressure up? And they aren't scouted looks. Like, we're not game planning the Panthers, so unscouted looks. Let's see if our rules and the things we teach from OTAs through training camp on a day-to-day basis, can you show up and can you execute just your fundamentals and techniques without having a game plan against someone? And that's the beauty of it, right? You don't know what's coming. You don't know what to expect. But can you just play within your rules, trust your rules, trust your technique, trust the guys around you?
Is there a point where y'all kind of intensify the process of picking 53 guys? I know we talk about it a lot, but is there like, how hard is it this year compared to years past? Seems like there's a little more depth, but is there like a point where you and Nick say, okay, this is our first version, second, third? What's the process like?
For me, and you know, honestly, I'm not thinking about the 53, just thinking about guys getting better. And that process, when it comes to for us to select 53 guys, you know, after our third preseason game, we'll tackle that process when it gets there. But right now, what I love about our team, we got a ton of competitive dudes all across the board on our team. And I would love to keep all these guys around because, you know, it just means a lot to me because knowing all the work, the sacrifice they put in, right, to make this team and to make themselves better, and I don't take that lightly. So that process will happen. It's always a tough process to dwindle it down to 53 guys when there's always more than 53 guys who are deserving of making the team.
D'Amico has been getting a lot more reps with the ones. What have you seen from him since really stepping into that role?
Ed's continued to improve, just his pass rush, just being under control, like playing better base, playing with his hands better, picking up the stunts and games better. Just I like, you know, how he's progressed. And Cole has done a really good job with Ed, and you know, he's done a great job. So I expect him to just continue to improve, and we'll see, you know, where we end up.
Coach, with the running back room kind of been in flux over the last couple of weeks, how impressed have you been with guys like Mowale and even Chubb, who's a veteran, kind of fluxing in and just filling in those positions through camp, and then obviously what the position will probably look like?
We have a really deep running back room. Dare is going back to the game last week versus Minnesota. Dare definitely popped, making some nice runs there. We got a lot of young guys there as well. You know, I want to see them get some reps this week and see how they handle the football. But overall, the room is competitive. It's a deep room. Got guys with experience, got young guys, and Coach Bear has done a good job of just molding that group the proper way.
And then lastly, obviously, the last open practice, obviously, of the season. It's the last time you'll be able to see the fans. The fans will see the team before Saturday. How excited are you guys just to be back in front of the fans on Saturday and just be in that environment, knowing it'll be the last time before the Monday night game?
This would be a really, really cool environment for us to get in front of our fans here at NRG on Saturday, actually to play a game. So it's be an exciting time. We're excited to see our fans come out and support us in the games. They've been out here every open practice we've had. We're thankful for the way our fans show up. And it's not just at 9 o'clock when we kick practice off. You know, I'm coming in at 5 a.m. and I see lines of people out here ready, waiting to come here and watch guys practice. So we are, man, incredibly grateful to our fans for the sacrifice and the time that they make to and the effort they put into being able to come out here early, getting here earlier than some of the coaches. They're out here ready to go. And just shows how excited everyone is about Texans football, right? And we're just as excited as our fans are. We're excited too. So thankful for all the support.
Based on where guys from an evaluation standpoint, when you win, you've got a game Saturday on the same bunch. But then you go back and look at the coaches' tape from the day. Does the mindset change in the evaluation process way a little bit more because of the practice, the nuances of seeing practice as opposed to the game situation, or does it balance the same way?
As we, you know, compare, great question, as we compare today's practice, the joint versus Carolina, as opposed to the game, you know, what I'm looking for, we go in today, there'll be mistakes, there'll be corrections that need to be made, and now can you see a guy make that jump and make the corrections he needs to make on Saturday as he play in the game? So when we evaluate the game, say, man, if this happened two times, did the guy progress? Did he get better with the looks that he was given? And for the most part, throughout camp, I've seen guys, you know, do that. And the good ones, you want to be a pro football player, you got to be able to, you know, not make the same mistakes over and over again, but make new mistakes. And that's what we'll like to see from our guys.
Can I follow up? You always talk about when the lights come on.
Yeah.
All right, lights on, see the lights. Saturday is the lights coming on. Does that, I mean, how do you look at it from that standpoint? If the guy that had a good practice would say today, and the lights come on, and he suddenly looks like a being good lights.
You'll see that a lot at times when guys get in games. You see guys who can rise up and make the plays that they've been making at practice. And sometimes you see guys who they're able to just show up on practice, right? So there's a difference there. And the good ones will separate themselves. It's not a lot of – it won't be hard for coaches to deem who separates themselves. Guys will show up on game day, they'll separate themselves, because now you get a chance to see guys truly cut it loose and finish. I know they're tired of me barking, hey, stay up, protect each other. Now you get a chance to cut it loose, and we'll see who can actually cut it loose.
What do you make of the way that you guys covered today? It's a lot of the first time that a lot of these guys in the secondary have seen the defense
so far. I did not see the defense. I saw one defensive play today. And you know what I saw? I saw Derek Stingley back to try to throw a back shoulder. I saw Derek Stingley pick it off and go to the house. So if they cover like that all day, it was a great day.
I can see if Jake Stewart had a couple of pass breakups too. I was just curious, given the C.J. Gardner-Johnson injury, like, what is it about MJ that you guys like as the next man up and then kind of filling that role, and what do you kind of expect out of him?
For MJ, man, what I love about MJ is not on the field, but off the field. When we're in the meeting room, MJ is the guy who's asking questions, like keeping the meetings going, like making sure we got a lot of back and forth banter going on in the meetings, like because he asks great questions, like challenging coaches, like why are we doing it this way? Why wouldn't we do it there or try this? So I love that when players speak up in meetings, and that's what MJ does, sets himself apart. And from that, bringing it onto the field, he's a great communicator. When he lines up, he does a great job of making sure everybody's on the same page. And that's so important for me and how we run our defense from the safety position. If you can't talk, you can't communicate to get everybody on the same page, then I really don't want you out there, right? Because you know, everybody's counting on you to make the right check. So MJ does that. Great communicator, not only defense, but also special teams. He's our personal protector. Takes a lot of communication there. So as a veteran guy who's showing up consistently year after year, carving out a role for himself just because he's a smart player, plays hard, plays physical, and also does a great job communicating.
All right, thank you.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
There you go. That's the head coach, DeMeco Ryans, after a joint training, a joint practice during training camp between the Texans and the Panthers there at the Houston Methodist Training Center. I'm going to be honest. There wasn't a lot there from DeMeco. He kept it really light. Some of that, honestly, defensively, because he mentioned he only saw one singular defensive play, which was the Stingley interception. That's how much he was involved with the offense. Now, to be fair, I think the way that it's been described is he was running the field where you had Texans offense and Panthers defense, and then Dave Canales was over on the other field where they were running Panthers offense, Texans defense. So, I mean, that makes sense to that degree. But also, I do appreciate that, you know, he took that. He took that that onus and he kind of focused there. But I did appreciate that answer that he gave about MJ Stewart at the end, because obviously you're trying to surmise with that question, you know, what makes him capable of maybe stepping in for C.J. Gardner-Johnson if he needs to for whatever period of time. Mm-hmm. And he goes, MJ is a guy who is asking questions and mentions that he asks great questions in the you know, off the field. And at first I was like, off the field, that's not what I care about. But it feels like that was intentional to point to, this is a smart dude who's going to know what we do in and out and know the answers, and he's a great communicator, so when he takes it to the field, that's going to show up. The question ultimately, though, is, does he have the capabilities of executing at the level that is high enough to, you know, cover over the gap that is left there by C.J. Gardner-Johnson for whatever period of time, if at all, is necessary to cover it?
And can he make up for any shortcomings there? The one thing I got out of that as the most important thing is we're getting more and more vibes of, it could be a 3-2 math equation.
At wide receiver.
Braxton Berrios, John Metchie, Xavier Hutchinson. Though he mentioned them in succession.
Justin Watson. Xavier Hutchinson has been talked about.
Xavier Hutchinson is already there. But you're going to have to fit three of those guys into two spots. It's just feeling more and more like it.
Well, I don't know. That's not what DeMeco said. He's not thinking about the 53-man right now.
Buy or sell.
We'll tackle that when we get there. No, there's no way that that's not a portion of the conversation, especially because you have so many guys that are so talented. And maybe that's why you could say maybe you're not thinking about it, because you're just like, hey, we've got a great amount of guys, and we'll just let this go. But I can't believe that he's not already starting to tear this out a little bit, or start to get a feel for, okay, who might be creating an edge for themselves. But I do believe that he is true when he says that it's not just about what you do in one game, but how you take it from one game to another. So Saturday noon at NRG Stadium will be big for the number of players that are jockeying for position on the depth chart, or just trying to make the depth chart and the 53-man roster for your Houston Texans. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, I look at the time and I look over at one Figgy Fig for Figgy's mixtape. What you got for us, man?
Yeah, so we got to take a trip over to Sunnyside. There's some wild stuff going on there, and you might want to, if you're eating lunch or anything like that, you might want to be careful a little bit.
Oh, wow. No.
Plus, imagine somebody saving your life and you flick them off. I got a crazy story about this.
This sounds ungrateful, but I feel like you're setting up a twist. So let's find out what that twist is next.
Yes, it is the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on a Thursday.
Correct.
Yeah, Thursday. Happy Thursday to everyone out there. I got to give a special salute to a guy by the name of Rich Maserati.
Oh, okay.
Man named Rich Maserati.
That almost sounds like a fake name. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's a...
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if that's his real last name. But he also go by RichDame_TV2 on Instagram.
Okay.
So what this guy like to do, he like to go around the city of Houston and, lack of a better word, expose some different places that are not that just looks bad.
Yeah.
So it might be some apartment complexes that's not really keeping up with the maintenance, mm-hmm. and people complaining and stuff like that.
Oh, is he trying to be like modern Marvin Zindler of a
Pretty
case?
Much,
putting
yeah.
people on blast the, so the hopefully you can shame them into doing what they need to do?
He the hood Marvin Zindler.
Shout out to the hood Marvin Zindler.
The yeah, hood I love Marvin it. Zindler.
Yep. So apparently this, speaking of Marvin Zindler, this actually got a little attention from ABC 13.
Perfect. Mm-hmm.
So let's head over to Sunnyside.
Oh, boy.
With a story on residents looking for some accountability at a local apartment complex.
Scurrying around the Cullen Park Apartments in Sunnyside, and he's got plenty of company.
It's about a million of them just going around.
Once the sun sets, Rich Maserati says the rats run rampant, commandeering this garbage bin, and sometimes slipping into apartments.
It's like Ratatouille around here, bro. Literally. Literally. Y'all seen the movie. It's worse than the movie.
Records show the city took 3 complaints about rats at the complex in May, including rats eating through walls.
How big are the rats?
They're the size of cats.
After another complaint last night, these code violation warnings popped up. But the rats remain.
Then as we're putting the trash in the thing, the rats come and attack us.
Rats aren't all that's rankling residents here. A look at the city's records reveal 13 complaints in the last 6 months, ranging from overflowing trash to leaking sewage to an elderly man who says he fell through his floor July 4th.
It's a lot wow. going on, man, in Sunnyside.
Rats the size of cats, huh?
Yeah, that might be a slight exaggeration, but maybe not a big one. Maybe not a big
know,
one,
man.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. What type of cat you talking?
Well, and the rats, you know, they...
Ratatouille over there, man.
They breed pretty abundantly.
I do. He's like, it's like Ratatouille, and I'm like, all right, I feel like there wasn't very much cooking happening at these Sunnyside apartments or the apartments in Sunnyside here. Nah, man, I'm really hoping that the end part of this conversation leads with somebody getting an exterminator out there so these people are living better.
Yeah,
please.
We got to pray for the people in Sunnyside, man, because it's no way in hell I'm living like that, bro.
That much?
I'm first thing smoking out, man. I can't do rats, mice, all that type of stuff, man.
It's funny because
it's an infestation.
100%. I don't ever think of Houston as a rat city, though.
Every city is a rat city.
Fair enough.
Yeah, every city's a rat.
Yeah, certain parts, because yeah. I think even around this area, and this area is nice, where we at the Greenway Plaza area, mm-hmm. it was a lot of, I ran into a lot of rats in this area. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of rough, but yeah, man, you got to pray for the people over at Sunnyside, man. My wife would be first thing smoking out of there. She see
you know what my wife would be doing. She was threatening to just stay at a hotel just because there was one that
That's
we saw.
True.
That's great. John? She gave you that loud, John?
That audio is still there somewhere.
I got to bring that out.
I still can't believe you did that. But yeah, man, I hope that the hood Marvin Zindler is going to get something to shake, mm-hmm. because I can't imagine a number of rats also of large size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. They can't even take their trash out. That's not... The rats are getting into the trash. The rats are defending the trash as if it's their home as well.
That's too much. Rats are ratting.
Yeah.
It's up to you to create the environment
this point,
where they don't.
At this point, they ain't doing nothing wrong.
Yeah.
It's you.
Mm-hmm. They said the rats was attacking them for bringing trash. Like, I thought you would enjoy this portion of the program.
The rats even talk about how nasty it is.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I can't do this.
We asked the resident rat there? About his thoughts of the situation.
Go look in the back. You got any other trash?
All right, it's the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610, Figgy Fig holding it down on a Thursday. So just imagine somebody trying to save your life, and in return, you flick them off.
I cannot.
That,
go ahead.
Well, that happened with a young lady. I want to say this was a Air France flight who had to take an emergency landing in Canada to save a woman's life, and she seemed very ungrateful about it. And according to the pilot, he hopped on the intercom after the plane took off again and revealed the woman gave him the finger on the way out the door.
What was the situation? How was she suffering? How was she in danger?
I'm trying to
look. Do you know?
So we're not really sure what the health issue was, but I guess the plane went over northern Canada and had to make a sharp right turn back to Newfoundland.
And that's the law.
Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Is it new?
I'm sorry. Ain't no Canadians here.
Yeah.
They're not here to tell us any different. But I think technically it's like Newfoundland.
That's how you pronounce it. That's how you pronounce it.
Well, what?
But
this is so weird.
Yeah, I wanted to ask y'all, what's something, I guess, the most ungrateful thing you ever seen or done to somebody who tried to help you? Because I have a personal answer.
Let's hear yours. I'm thinking of one.
I think the only, well, I mean, it was definitely ungrateful, but, you know, when I was younger, my mom, like her, one of her like best friends, you know, your mom's best friend is basically your aunt. And she, you know, took care of me plenty of times, but there was one time that apparently I was very hungry and I got to a point where I was breaking bad. I was like, you know, is food ready? It's like, no. And then I think when the food started getting ready, my mom's friend started getting the plate. And at some point, I don't remember exactly how it came up, but I was like, that's why you're fat. Something like that. Just like deeply ungrateful. This is a person that cares for me and loves me. It loves me quite a bit. And I was just like lashing out because I was hungry. Not right, but definitely fat. One of those. Yes, that is why you're fat. Like, yeah. I don't recall it. It's a story that's told to me, and I still feel bad about it.
Remember when, it's been about 5 years, but you were here 4 or 5 years. I ran into the gas station over here, and there was a couple arguing in the car. And like arguing, like, physical arguing, and the door opened, and I hesitated at first because you don't know if these people have guns or whatever.
That's,
you know,
a great point. Yes.
You know, and I kind of hesitated, and then I looked and I walked over there and I asked the lady if she was all right. She got all mad at me. She got
you was all up in her face, in her space.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of times that's typical of these domestic violence things where, you know, they're like, oh, no, he's fine. He's not going to hit. Well, he was kind of shoving you around.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, it was a situation similar to that. It was so wild when you think about it now. It was somebody just driving down the street, and apparently they got into it in the car to the point they stopped in front of my house, and they got out the car. They were just arguing back and forth, and my neighbor came out, was like, hey, y'all got to, you know, let's move this home, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dude got mad at my neighbor for jumping in.
Yeah.
So they start fighting, and the girl tried to jump in to beat my neighbor up.
After fighting with the dude.
Yeah. So that was so wild. But my personal one is my wife. Salute to my wife. So this was back when I was like 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sometimes I'll just be blurting out ideas and stuff like that. Like, man, I told her, I'm like, I want to have some type of 80s party. Maybe do it at a club and blah, 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 blah. And what does she do? For my 25th birthday, she throws me an 80s birthday party at like a little center and all that stuff. Well, I was like, I ain't want you to throw me a birthday party for this.
God.
I just wanted the actual party. I ain't want it to be about me.
You ungrateful.
Yeah. And it was like a surprise, unofficial surprise birthday party.
Yeah, that's nasty work.
So that's on you, Figgy.
No, I was like, I really appreciate it a lot, but I just wanted to do a party. I didn't want a birthday party. Yeah. I didn't want it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, don't throw me no birthday party. This is a fire party, though, but I want it to be all about me. I just wanted to throw a generic ass 80s party.
Yeah, that was not going.
Yeah, that was on you, man.
There's that.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you're good. There's just people texting in with their ungrateful stories, and now I would like to laugh. But go ahead. You got it, Fig. It's your world. We just living in it.
It's the Mixtape in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. So we coming up on that time of fantasy football and all that good stuff.
That's right.
And I want to know, where were y'all at, I want to say about 6 years ago, when the most surprising retirement in NFL history happened?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, if you don't know what I'm talking about, here's Andrew Luck retirement during a preseason game, I want to say.
So the Bears are set to kick this off, and you see Andrew Luck on the sidelines. There is a report that has been filed by Adam Schefter of ESPN that Andrew has informed the team of his desire to retire from the National Football League. Obviously, this will be the topic of discussion tonight, tomorrow, and for a long time after that.
I think we were at a Texans preseason game.
Yep.
If I remember correctly, the Texans were playing simultaneously.
I think I was there too, and that was around the same time. Lamar Miller. I want to say Torres ACL or hamstring or something like that.
Second biggest news in the division.
Bill O'Brien had his ass playing.
That is, I'm still amazed that the people of Indy decided that what the right thing to do in that moment was boo Andrew Luck. I wonder, all them people that were in that building at that on that day, I wish that we could flash them back to that moment from now understanding what the next however years would look like. And honestly, their supposed answer to it being Anthony Richardson out here looking like he looks right now.
Yeah.
And see how if they would respond in the same way or if they wouldn't kiss the ground that Andrew Luck walked on.
You know the answer
as he walked out of that building.
You know the answer to that.
The audacity of them people.
Yeah, you talk about them. How about somebody who actually drafted Andrew Luck just a couple hours before he retired? Here's O.J. Simpson with a message for Andrew Luck.
Lord have mercy.
Andrew Luck, what did I do to you? You could have retired an hour and a half ago before I picked you in my fantasy picks. I mean, what did I do, man? I've been a fan of yours. Why would you do this to me? Come out of retirement. I'm just saying.
This could be a confession right here. I hit the drop. I kind of miss the OJ videos, the random ass. I'm just saying.
Oh, they're yeah.
Hello, Twitter world.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Hey, Twitter world. It's yours truly.
Yours truly was the best part. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I miss it too. But no one is going to defend OJ on that.
What do you want me to say?
There's
one person who could defend OJ. But
we actually had a situation that was pretty much worse than that here at this station. Remember Clint and Kamala. It was a pretty much a cup of coffee here. Didn't last too long.
Yeah.
But remember he sent out a tweet pretty much saying it was weak or something like that.
Oh, that's right. He was torching him.
Yeah, that tweet went viral. Talk about viral. He got what you call quote tweeted or ratio. No, they call it ratio.
They put him up on the Summer Jam.
This was 6 years ago.
Did we officially have the this you at that point? Because that's what everybody was like, is this you?
Is this you? Yeah.
You making this point, huh?
Yeah. So it was rough.
I forgot about it. He got destroyed.
He got crushed, man.
Andrew Luck.
Speaking of getting crushed, that's why Andrew Luck had it. He was like, I done had too many of these head injuries.
He could barely walk.
This, man.
He could barely see straight, finally called it a career. It's like, that's weak. You're letting down your team.
And to be fair, it was quite a few tweets that was like that going around. But Rick Hamlin probably had the one that stuck out the most.
Yeah,
yikes.
With them tweets.
Yeah, that's.
All right, that was the mistake. I do want to do a little tease for tomorrow.
Oh, okay. We got a tease for tomorrow.
Got the 24-hour tease coming up on the mixtape. So tomorrow's Friday. We're going to be doing a little tailgating on Saturday. Salute to HEB. I think we're going to be in the Orange Lot.
That is correct. Yeah.
So we're going to be in the Orange Lot, kicking in and all that stuff. But I want people to text in. Hell, I might take some calls. I want you to shout out your tailgate. What's your tailgate looking like? What's the name of your tailgate? I want you to shout it out. Let me know what you eat.
So that's tomorrow in the mixtape.
Yep.
Very good. Looking forward to it.
I like it.
Yeah, we got to get back in the tailgate season.
That's right. That's right. That is Figgy Fig. Figgy's mixtape, 1:20 p.m. every day right here on Sports Radio 610. Be ready to, shout your tailgate out tomorrow as we head into the first of a number of games in the 2025 season with preseason game number 2 versus the Panthers there at NRG Stadium at noon. All right. Coming up next, we get ready to hand things off to the fellas of the drive, but I want to talk a little bit more about this team, about practice, but also about the safety position. We'll do that next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Hope your Thursday is going pretty well. Appreciate all the people that have contributed to this show, obviously all the people that have been listening, all y'all. Much appreciation to Seth Payne for joining us at noon to give us his sights and sounds from the joint practice between the Texans and the Panthers. That's right. That is actually a good amount of explanation
that
as to what was happening
today.
Yeah, that's that did factor in, which honestly, weirdly enough, factored in a little bit more on defense than we would have imagined as well for the practice there because, the defense, there was clearly some takeaways. There was a Stingley interception, which, of course, D'Amico Ryan said was the only defensive play that he saw for his team. But secondary safety things are something that we're still looking at. And Matt Burke, as well as Nick Cayley and Frank Ross, the coordinators, talked yesterday, not today, but Matt Burke was kind of asked about the safety position as well, and you found something interesting within what he said.
Well, I did, and then I found it even more interesting today, and that's one of the reasons that I asked Seth about the safety position in particular. I don't think, you know, a lot of times coach speak maybe just a little vague or a lot vague and, you know, sort not giving away, you know, everything, which no one would expect you to. I honestly felt that Matt Burke talking about the safeties. Well, let's listen to him just sort of in general talk about Jalen Petrie and the safety position.
I could see lots of scenarios. I mean, I think right now we're just trying to get a lot of guys work and in different spots. And, you know, some of those injuries are short term and some are longer term. So, you know, we just sort of try to get them ready to play this week. And as the season gets closer, we'll figure out how to deploy our guys best. You know, Jalen's had history at a lot of spots as well. Again, another guy that's played multiple roles for us. So I think we just, again, part of what we're doing in camp is really trying to cross-train a lot of people. And, you know, injuries happen. And so obviously always looking ahead to, hey, if something happens at one spot, how do we fill that in or who's the next guy up? So playing lots of scenarios, Sarge.
I actually believe every bit of that. He's like, hey, we're looking. We'll see what it looks like. And then lo and behold, today – you know, we were talking with Seth, we were, you know, getting the reports from practice. You know, one of the things that bothered him, I don't know if that'd be the right word, but, you know, that stood out to him and not necessarily in a great way was the safety position, especially, you know, defense up the middle, which was an issue last year.
Big plays.
Yeah.
Big plays. That's one of the things that you could point to as something that you did not appreciate about this Texans defense last year was at times big plays could be gotten against them, especially with like the Colts, who were big play type teams. Honestly, there was a number of games where it's like, damn, you should not have this many, you know, opportunities down the field against a defense of this caliber that was there. You hope that that does not continue to be the case, because that does feel like, you know, one of the potential points of regression, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the possibility of that continuing? We were actually talking, funny enough, about points of regression on this defense or on this team in general, and I kind of want to return to that because I was reminded of one of those, which is D'Amico Ryans with seemingly taking more of a holistic approach to the entirety of the team, as evidenced by him kind of running one side of the practice, which makes sense, right? In a joint practice, have one head coach run one side and the other one run the other. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more of a Matt Burke-helmed defense this year. And I don't think that's a bad thing by any means. However, we do have to leave open the possibility that even though I think Matt Burke is a good defense coordinator, I think he's very clearly very attuned to what's happening on the field. I do wonder, is there any possibility that there's kind of a letdown when it comes to play calling as opposed to D'Amico Ryans having his full, you know, grasp on what's happening with the defense, assuming that's the way that they handle it?
I actually don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. And why is that?
D'Amico, I don't think, is going to let go of the actual play calling. Now,
okay.
I think Matt Burke is a bigger role and is a bigger factor in those calls than maybe some people want to believe, because, you know, D'Amico's on TV and he's got the headset on, he's got the card in his hand and he's shouting all the instructions and everything. I think he ultimately makes the call and the final call on what they're going to run in a particular situation. I think Matt Burke does a lot already. I don't see any scenario in which D'Amico Ryan's going to let that go. And as far as today, I think he, for two reasons, he was involved on that field where the Texans offense was playing. As you know, these coaches have long conversations before every joint practice, every practice really, about, hey, what do you want to see? How do you want to play this or whatever? I think it could be as simple as, you know, Dave Canales, you know, he's running a new offense too, and he's the play caller over there.
New offense, because they had the offense last year.
Trying to add things,
sure.
You know, elements, and certainly Bryce Young in second year and all that stuff. I think he wanted to be, hey, would you mind if I just stay on this field? D'Amico probably said, cool, I've been wanting to pay more attention to the offense, and I've got a defensive coordinator that's more than capable.
Certainly.
I think it could be very straightforward and simple. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. It could be he's starting to give him more, you know, more of a say. But I don't think he's ever going to give up like game day play calling.
No, fair. And I think it's just a way to kind of probe into that space. It is fair to point out that Matt Burke is deeply involved and has been in, you know, installation, game plan, all of that. Just, you know, if assuming that he is more involved in the actual game day play calling, does that change anything? And maybe the answer is actually just no. Like, he is so much an extension of what D'Amico wants with the time that they've had together and with the ways in which he's had a hands-on experience with all of this. It's probably just going to operate similarly. That'd be really cool. Somebody said from the 3-4-6, is it play calling or just the free safety and getting beat deep? Oh, when it comes to the big plays, that's a good question. Because I can't imagine that it's simply just the play calling that happens against them. Like, but yeah, I think we probably should dig a little bit further into it. Like, is there something that immediately comes to mind for you? Because as I'm thinking about it, I don't think it's simply just the play calling.
I don't think it's play calling. And I think part of it is what we just talked about. The safety position is not what we thought it was going to be. That's also been a weak spot when some of these same guys were on the field last year. Maybe there's a factor there. But I think it's really like this personnel, this group, as Seth was talking about, they gave up a lot of plays. They were out of position a lot last year. That was the one small weak spot on this team, and they tried to improve it. They brought in C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Obviously, that didn't work out, or at least not yet. So I think it's really just – it wasn't necessarily play calling. It's just personnel.
Yeah, the things that come to mind to me were – obviously, there's people that have their qualms with Eric Murray. I don't think that he was as bad as sometimes we talk about, but he also – wasn't great. Like, there were instances where you could get him. And then I think Kalen Bullock having to step in and be a rookie who has the responsibilities of being that last man deep and being a ball hawking player inherently, there were going to be some missteps. And I think that you know, opposing offenses took advantage of that at times when you had some of those. So yeah, I think that's probably where I'd lean to more. I don't think that it's as much like poor play calling from the defense, but also, to be fair, You're not gonna be 100%. Like, there's gonna be instances where on the play calling battle you might lose that particular matchup of plays that are drawn out there.
I also think Kalen Bullock being better this year is just gonna make the safety position better in general.
Certainly,
because not just positioning, but we found out he can go get the ball. But it's still gonna be one that they want to focus on. Like I said, you just heard from me. I believed everything he's like, yeah, we're trying a lot of stuff. Trying to figure it out there.
Yeah, for sure. If you were at all still interested, Mariners Orioles got to a 5-0 lead for the Orioles. Was it a big third inning, if memory serves, or was it the fourth? Either way, Orioles had put in some runs on the board. They were in the fifth, was the bottom of the fifth, and it seemed like the heavens opened up out there.
Rains a lot in Baltimore.
In Baltimore. So that one looks like it's in a rain delay, I think, on a getaway day. With the home team up by so many runs and with the amount of water that had already dropped on the field, I personally believe that that was going to be called, and the Astros will have a game and a half lead going into the weekend. So that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think they're going to call this. I mean, unless the Mariners, you know, go in there and really try to protest and say, hey, we're in a race here, man. We are in a race here. So we need to play this thing. We'll see. But I think they're probably going to call it.
Yeah. Look, go ahead and call it. Either way, it seems like the Orioles did the Astros a solid, handled up business there, and gave the Astros a little bit of breathing room before they head into the weekend. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. I guess this is a fair enough point from Kicks Rocks on the YouTube as well. Defense that'll play aggressive and our turnover focus will always give up a few big plays. Yeah, but I don't think that that's a good acknowledgement of what happened last year. That was more than a few. They gave up. There were more big plays than I think are just inherently possible with the defense that's aggressive.